Well, welcome to another Creative Floor podcast. It's Shahid here. We do have some amazing job opportunities in this podcast, so do keep a listen out for those a little later on. And don't forget, our award show is open and the early bird deadline is the 12th of February. We have a bit of a mashup today. We're sort of joining forces with the Forecast podcast that launched last year. So I'm really delighted to introduce the chaps on that. We've got Adrian Park from 300 Strong. Hey, right, Adrian.
Hello.
How you doing? Happy New Year.
Very well, thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. We've also got Selwyn Lerner from Lerner Adams Bones. You're right, Selwyn.
Hi, how you doing? Happy New Year. Good to hear your voice
Happy
again.
Yeah. Oh, I know. God. Well, yeah. At least someone's glad to hear it. And we've got the legendary Frank Walters. You all right, Frank?
I'm very well, Shahid. Nice to hear from you, and Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah, lovely to hear your voice too. And we're also missing someone from your podcast too. We're missing Jeremy Perrault, who has just emailed. He's going around Australia. He's on a massive shoot at the moment, and he's only got very limited internet connection, so unfortunately he's unable to join us, but he might pop in later on if he manages to steal someone's laptop. So yeah, anyway, it's just really, really great to have you guys on here at the start of 2021. Obviously 2020 was a bit of a crazy whirlwind for everyone, and actually getting some of your guys' perspectives on a little bit of last year, a little bit of future gazing into this year, just be really invaluable, because I think between all of your sort of experiences, it sort of tops most people that I normally get on this podcast. Interestingly, last podcast I did, which we pushed out a couple of days ago, was all around the next generation. And so we've kind of got the opposite here. We've got people who've kind of been there, done it. And I think your perspectives and your opinions will be absolutely fascinating to listen to, because I think you'll have a much better idea than any most of us listening to this. So is that kind of cool? How was it all for you last year? How was 2020?
How was 2020? Well, it started all right. It got a bit worse. Then it got surprisingly quite a bit better. And I would say it was not too bad, considering that I hardly ever see any of my staff in the flesh. Not actually, surprisingly, not as traumatic as I would have thought if I'd, for example, been in the restaurant business. So I think it was okay. I think it's nice to – I think I might have mentioned this on a podcast or something that we've done before – it's quite interesting that the dynamic changes ever so slightly between an agency or between, you know, us and clients, because there is this sort of the kind of veneer of agency falls away and it's just people talking to each other via a platform. And that seems to help in some way, I think. It's not a bad thing. But other than that, it's, I mean, I think I miss going out and seeing friends and, you know, I've got an office in Soho. I miss going out to pubs in Soho and kind of doing the ad agency stuff. But other than that, not too bad.
When was the last time you went into your office?
Well, we just had a new intercom system fitted. So we were there a couple of days ago. But as a group, I think we did a couple of days. We got everybody in a couple of days towards the end of last year. And that's it. So I think we had a couple of days in early December, mid-December. I think we were planning a sort of get-together in the office for the Christmas get-together. We've got quite a lot of space, so we could socially distance everybody. But in the end, we decided that was too risky. So we're doing something via Zoom this, I think it might actually be this afternoon. I'm not sure. I think it is this afternoon. Where we just basically pay for our own drinks this time instead of having the agency pay for them.
So fair enough. And Adrian, like, obviously 2020 was a sort of big year for you as well. I mean, how was it personally? How did it go for you?
Yeah, it was a strange old year, actually, because obviously I've been ECD-ing for, you know, quite a vast majority of my career, to be honest. So network agency. So it was it was a big change, and it's one that I didn't really expect to happen. I left McCann round about February, And yeah, middle of Feb. And about 3 weeks later, we were all in lockdown. So it wasn't the best time to leave, to be fair. But actually, it was quite a refreshing sort of, I could take my foot off the gas and do stuff that I'd been getting around to or hadn't done for ages and ages. And it was just a nice time to sort of sit back and reflect and sort of do a bit of navel gazing and check out what I wanted to do in the future, really. And so it was a year of, to be honest, the first 6 months, it was sort of like quite a year of reflection. It was nice as well, because obviously it was summertime too. So it was a good summer this year, in as much that, it didn't rain very much. So just being out and about in nature and stuff was during the week. It was just bizarre, but really, really nice. It was one of those things where I could sort of go, right, okay. It's one of those things where you kind of look at yourself and go, do I really want to get back into that, or do I want to do something different? I'm not very good at, building stuff or, painting and decorating. Well, I can do it, but I can't really be, it didn't really fulfill my life. So I'm only really any good at one thing, really. So I kind of thought, well, okay, so I want to pursue, I want to carry on doing it, but I just don't want to do it in the way that I have been doing it. So for me, I sort of set up 300 Strong, got in touch with a load of mates that, I've worked with over the years, people I like, people I respect, people I trust, people who are good at their jobs, who have sort of either found themselves in the same situation or independent companies. And there's loads of them out there. So I basically did kind of what Jeremy's doing, really. Made a bunch of connections and kind of thought, well, if I am going to do this job, I'd like to do it on my terms now, and sort of look at the world in a slightly, or look at the way that we do our industry in a slightly different way, without all the other distractions that come with it. So for me, it was it's been a real sort of like change year. And to start off with, I think I sort of kicked this off around about September time. By October, I was thinking, oh, Christ, this is never going to work. But actually, all of a sudden, November, December, things have really turned around. And I'm kind of loving it now. It was a bit of a risk, but I think it's going to pay off.
Yeah, well, I guess hindsight is 20/20 vision, isn't it? I guess sort of leaving the security of a full-time job, is obviously hard enough. And then all of a sudden, a sort of worldwide pandemic and sort of global recession sort of then all of a sudden, pops its head up. And it can feel quite daunting. But actually thinking about it, your whole journey of 2020, maybe it was a bit of a godsend because you had that break, because I think most people, and I can certainly reflect on my own experience of being, stuck to a chair, stuck to a full-time job, stuck to the day-to-day pressures that never really, calmed down. It only got more as the year progressed. Like the effect that it's had on people's mental health has been pretty awful. And actually, you've been quite blessed to have that space, to have that break, to perhaps not go through, what a majority of people perhaps were going through, and to have that time and that space to decide, what will make you happy and in the sort of next phase of your life. So actually setting something up has been quite a common trend, I think, from lots of people that I know, leaving the big sort of big organizations to just go and try something different. And in many respects, you sort of look at the world today and, Selwyn's got his amazing office in Soho, but, a lot of people don't really need central London locations anymore to service clients or even create work. I mean, you said you were on a shoot yesterday, right?
Yeah. We were on a shoot yesterday in central London. It was in East London.
Selwyn's office.
You're welcome to it. It's empty at the moment.
It was quite incredible. And going back to what you just said, I think fate is a really weird thing, isn't it? It's one of those things where you kind of go, okay, so this has happened, and actually you sort of deal with it in the way that you think best. But 9 times out of 10, it all works out really well. For me anyway, but sometimes I find myself in a situation, but actually you kind of go, if I can work my way through this, and generally it's for the better. And you're talking about like working through the lockdown. I didn't work through the lockdown, so the first one anyway. And I do think that, you know, you're talking about mental health and stuff. Trying to replicate an office via a platform or via a computer, I think it's proven to most people that it doesn't really work that well. It's stressy. It's, you can't, your home is your home and your office is your office. Yeah. And I think when you're, you know, when you're in a big network, oh,
God,
when you're in an office environment,
sorry. I think in Adrian's case, his office is his son's bedroom.
Yeah. When you're in an office environment, no, that's a separate space. Trying to replicate that at home doesn't work. So I think you've got to work around it. You know, you've got to sort of find a happy medium. And I think as the second lockdown and third lockdown's gone on, perhaps I'd like to think that, you know, those people who are like got proper jobs are sort of work of finding a sort of middle ground, if you like, and finding a way of getting around this, because I don't think this is going to go away, to be fair.
Yeah, totally. And Frank, what have you been up to? I just keep seeing loads of amazing, like absolutely incredible watercolor paintings on social media. Is that basically what you're up to now?
More or less. I think obviously the whole of 2020 was a massive change, not just for me, but obviously for everyone. I mean, you know, it was huge. If we talk about what I was doing, I sort of share Adrian's comment about me being really good at only one thing. I'm in the same boat, really. I like art. I like creativity. Persuasion. I like to, you know, I'm more about the emotion rather than the functionality, you know, the usual stuff. And I can't really change. So I'm lucky in a way that I, you know, I've got certain talents that revolve around that sort of artful talents, you know, their art and communication and, you know, just compelling thinking, you know, which is important to all of us, you know, on this podcast. We're all in this same area. So I was lucky in a way, because after, I don't know, 35 years in health and well-being at Paleon Waters and then Frontera, setting up Frontera as a digital company, I decided at the beginning of 2020 to really spend a lot more time getting into art and getting into, in particular, watercolor, which is something I've done for a long time. And I'm not too bad at it because I've been doing it a long time. But I was already the watercolor tutor at Q Art Studio in West London. And I'd been the tutor there for 5 years already. And so I decided to start, I had some ideas of teaching abroad, going to venues, going to art retreats. I had little gigs lined up in Kalymnos and a chateau in the south of France. Everything was all set up. And that was right at the beginning of the year. And then suddenly COVID arrived. I was lucky enough at that point that you know, my time in full-time advertising, I'd used Zoom. I'd used media. Zoom was one of them. And so what I did, I switched very quickly in about March time, I think, is when it all sort of kicked off. And I organized myself with Zoom. And I've been working out of my little office at home ever since. And I've got to say that being a watercolor tutor on Zoom has really sort of worked for me, but it's kept me, you know, as Adrian said, you know, I'm good for one thing, he's good for one thing, and it's art. I'm still in the area of art, and I still like it. I still keep in touch with people that I know in advertising. I still, and a lot of clients as well, and even Mike Paling I keep in touch with. He's still going strong at the moment. But so that's where I am at the moment. And if you're interested, you can find me on frankwatercolors.com.
Good old plug there, Frank.
Unashamed plug.
I look at, like, you know, social media does your head in. I tell you what, there's one thing that's like it's kind of got my goat a little bit in 2020, because I've had a bit of time on my hands. I've been, you know, you spend a lot more time on your phone, sort of like flicking around on like you know, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and all that. I get these little reports come up every now and again. It's like you spent 3 hours on your phone yesterday. Jesus Christ, how much time am I wasting on these bloody platforms? But they do suck you in. But what I've noticed, especially in 2020, is that it seems like the world's at war. There's no middle ground anymore. It's like in Twitter especially, you can say the most innocuous thing on Twitter. The next minute, you're like, pilloried. Everybody's got an opinion. I think we were a lot better off back in the mullet days when we didn't have social media. You sort of kept your opinion to yourself. I think it's what's happened in America. America's basically, I don't know, it's just turned into like the personification of Twitter.
But everybody's got an opinion. Everyone's hiding behind the anonymity of the platform. And then there's a whole other genre of responses where people try to be as witty as possible in the put down. Another fantastic takedown of this, that, and the other. Another facepalm. They're quite entertaining. Some people are proving to be remarkably witty. Quite enjoyable. Yeah.
It's true. Is it helping, though? Do you know what I mean? I mean, like we talk about mental health. We talk about all these concerns. And, you know, we worry about what we put in our bodies, you know, like eating properly. You know, I remember in the 70s and 80s, you used to live on Fray Bentos and, you know, pot noodles.
Diet 60.
Still be able to function, you know. I was always convinced, you know, these kids you see at work, you know, the millennials, they're so healthy, you know, they have alfalfa beans and, you know, goji berries and all that stuff that I'd never heard of. I think jojoba was about as exciting as exotic as I got. But when I had hair. But the thing is that they seem to, these guys seem to be really, really conscious about, you know, what they put in their bodies. But to be honest, I think there's more of a thing going forward, 2021 maybe, is what you put in your mind. I think, I don't think social media is helping anyone at the moment mentally. It seems to me that although we have the freedom to express ourselves, the comebacks that come with it, a really like kind of, oh Christ, you know, if you're not robust enough to be able to like put an opinion out there and take it, it's a really tricky, it's a bit of a balance. It's just one of these things.
I agree. It's a bit of a sort of survival of the fittest, really. I think if you're not mentally up for it, you're going to get hammered. It's not good. I mean, social media, I suppose in a way, you know, through these COVID days that we're going through, you know, social media is a blessing because, you know, things like Zoom and the way we communicate, life can sort of, communication continues. We still talk to anyone we want to talk to. And I think that's quite important. But you're absolutely right. I think culture is slightly changing a little bit. You know, I think the way general behavior is changing. And some of it isn't particularly nice. And I agree with that. I agree with that. I think manners, simple things like, I'm sounding like an old man now, but, you know, just basic stuff like manners, you know, just doesn't matter anymore. People don't seem to care too much about that. It's all about opinionation. It's all about people getting a point of view out there. And then it's reactionary as well. You're right. It's knee-jerk reaction. Somebody doesn't like something, then it all kicks off, you know.
Yeah.
And I think so. Those put downs, I quite like some of the put downs, but then that's just the way I look at things, and I can understand a lot of people being very upset by people's reactions. You know, it's very interesting because it's all about, again, we talked about this before, human psychology, the psychology that the four of us always used, you know, and always you know, sort of took an angle on when we were communicating to our target audience, you know, for our respective agencies.
Yeah.
We do. We understand human nature, but Adrian, you're right. Human nature sort of seems to be going through a point of change at the moment. It's weird.
It really does. It really does. I think that, you know, that whole, you know, that Trump and Biden thing, you know, there's like, there's no sort of middle ground. Who's the guy in the middle, you know? Is there someone that's not, you know, either extreme left, extreme right. If you're talking about football, you know, are you Wenger in, Wenger out? Do you like Ozil? I love Ozil. I hate Ozil. Going back to Arsenal, but everything just seems to be at an extreme in whatever we seem to do. And this goes back to, you know, when we're talking about like brands advertising on social media, and yeah, it's a great platform. It is, but it isn't. Because if you look at some of the stuff that's being advertised on social media, it's either uber safe or uber edgy. And most of it's pretty safe, to be fair. And I think it's dead safe because everyone's frightened of the negative feedback. And so with a platform like that, that you can feed back on, I think the tendency to play it safe is probably far greater. And it's kind of a completely the opposite end of the spectrum of how it was sold to us. Do you know what I mean?
So do you think we're as a, not obviously all of us, but do you think that the sort of the general move is being risk averse? Because the platforms are so open to other people commenting, we take every view as personal or every view as equally important, and therefore we try and appeal to everybody. I mean, advertising has always been about trying to provoke reaction in some way, and you're just as happy with some people not liking it and some people really liking it, but you don't want to be bland. But here we're in that situation where we don't, you know, there might be millions of people who like stuff, five people say it's rubbish, and you suddenly think, oh, I better change that.
Yeah, but in, you know, the sort of risk
enables that.
Yeah, the risk averse, you know, in communication and health and well-being, for instance, which is an area where we've all worked, you know, in health and well-being communication, you know, there, at least there's a little bit of sort of control there. It was called legal and medical, you know. You work for somebody, you have to get things through legal and medical, obviously, because you're dealing with drugs, you're dealing with healthcare professionals and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, out there at the moment, there are no rules. There are no... It's a bit of a free-for-all. You know, there are no house rules, really, with how you behave on social. We can sort of basically get away with everything, as Trump did, you know, on Twitter. He can say whatever he likes, which is that has a lot to do with things, I think, in the States, was the communication of his individual thoughts. And it was hated by a lot of people, and it really appealed to others. And that's why it's become so divisive. I mean, if you listen to the Trump supporters, they, you know, if Trump says, nah, you know, those elections weren't right, they all believe it. All his supporters trust him and say, yeah, it's not right. And that's why there's anger and resentment. And you can sort of see it in a way. And I think, personally, that social media has got a lot to do with that. I think if Trump would have got in power and done his own thing and not had Twitter to view his personal opinions on things, I think things might have been a little bit different. Who knows?
Yeah, I think we're natural communicators, aren't we? And the platforms, social platforms, give everybody an option to, an opportunity to speak. But I don't necessarily know that that is a good thing, that everybody speaks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Frank, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head, though, when you're, you know, who's policing it? I mean, if you're looking at Twitter as a media platform, which is what it is, you know, if a brand was to go and put some 48 sheet posters out or some radio ads or some TV ads, they can't say what they want to say. You know, they can't lie, because if all of a sudden you're making a claim, even if it's about a Mars bar, you know, giving you five times the amount of energy, anyone can complain. And, you know, you've got the ASA or equivalent boards to take it down. Now you've got, you know, Donald Trump, who's got access, well, he used to have access to 90 million people. You know, he can say whatever he wants. People have got the ability to share with, you know, endless amount of people and no one to police it. And the rules aren't the same for everyone. So I think you're right, Aid, as well. Like, brands who are sort of operating in social media are being ultra, ultra conservative and sort of probably very easily ignored, because the rules aren't the same, because they can't behave in the same way as a, you know, as a Donald Trump. But and I think that's the issue, though. I think Twitter is such a big conundrum and a sort of contradiction in itself, because on one side you can go, well, they've taken Donald Trump's Twitter account down, that's fantastic, but on, you know, the next day they're allowing like the Chinese government to sort of post out propaganda on Uyghur Muslims, or then they're allowing, you know, the sort of president of Iran making anti-Semitic comments on Twitter. Do you know what I mean? So it's almost like Twitter. Twitter doesn't sort of think it's a media platform. Twitter thinks it's just a sounding board for anyone. You know, and I think it should be treated in the same way as a newspaper. There is a consequence to misinformation. You know, just like reporters have to put out apologies or take things down if they're wrong.
Absolutely, yeah.
Twitter thinks of itself as the corkboard that other people put messages on, but that's just naive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the suggestion box in the office where, you know, it's all anonymous, but, you know, somebody reads them out at the end of the day and goes, oh, Christ, oh, really?
This one must be from Adrian, they'll say.
But I think it's a fair point linking back to the mental health aspect, though, because I think, again, I can speak from my own experience. I can speak from lots of people that I know. I think a lot of people's mental health was clearly affected in 2020. And actually, one way of just really sort of trying to switch off from it was actually just not looking at your phone, you know, just completely ignoring social media, ignoring the news and all those sorts of things. And you do wonder, like, the impact that is going to have on people who are much younger, who actually just find it very difficult. I mean, you know, it's proven that social media is as addictive as drugs.
Yeah.
You know, they've proven it. So it's going to be really interesting, because this is not the environment to, because, you know, you can't go out. So everyone's stuck at home. What are you going to do? You know, you're going to be looking at your phone.
I think that the mental health thing is, I was having a think about this before today's chat, and Adrian actually alluded to the idea that, you know, when we're all sort of disparate, we're all in our own homes, maybe there's some element of the culture that used to glue agencies together, organizations together, that's sort of beginning to evaporate. But I remember when I was much younger, in my 20s, and I had a flat. I was given a flat as part of my job, and I didn't just arrived in London. I didn't know that many people. If this COVID situation had occurred then, because I can remember from time to time, you know, not going out for a couple of days or a couple of evenings and being a bit exactly lonely. But, you know, you're sort of aware that you're just by yourself and you've got to go to work tomorrow. If you weren't doing any of that stuff, you're a young person, you're just trying to begin your career, your life, you're trying to build your new network of friends, and suddenly you can't go anywhere. You're in a little flat. You've got nothing to do. Now, if you take the fact that if you imagine there's no social media or any of that stuff, it drives you absolutely nuts. You would be you'd be hanging yourself. So the social media, the platforms are a bit of a double-edged sword, as I think you've sort of alluded to, really. They're enabling people to sort of remain in contact with people, but it's also hard to discriminate the good from the bad sometimes in terms of what you're seeing and how addicted you are, how attached you are to it. But I really worry about the younger guys. You know, bit of a hobby horse. We used to, when we all started in agencies, there were these big organizations, and they helped create these structures that helped you as you were younger. But without those, people come out of university and want a job in, I don't know, let's for sake of argument, want a job in healthcare advertising. They've got an art degree or a science or something. They think this is the industry for them. They're going to be stuck in front of a computer. It must be much, much harder for them to learn and develop and also feel part of the organization. And maybe we can come on to the sort of where the cultures of organizations are kind of evaporating when everybody's at home. But I think it feels to me like they are. And I'm really worried. I know people talk about this working from home being the future, but I do worry that for younger people, the level of interaction, not that they necessarily can't interact with their friends, but they can't feel as proud of being tied into a company as they used to, which is bad for the companies as well as for the individuals, I think.
I think you're right. I think Selwyn's right about the sort of evaporation of culture. And I certainly noticed it that, I wouldn't say the evaporation, I wonder whether it's more homogenized than it used to be. We sort of used to, in agencies, I mean, a mishmash of people, and we used to celebrate the individuals and the, you know, there's always a nut at the crazies. as Upper used to say. I just wonder whether the we still say it, but we say it as a sort of advertisement or do we actually believe it? Do we actually believe that, you know, we celebrate the crazies? Because you just sort of the flattening off of culture. That's because obviously, you know, we don't want individuals. We want everybody to sort of have this corporate culture. And sometimes that culture doesn't fit, and sometimes that culture shifts. And actually what you thought was the culture changes, and actually you suddenly realize, actually, I'm not sure if I fit into this culture, which sort of moves around. So, and I think, yeah, with the, as I said earlier, you know, bringing an office into a little room in your flat, it's the culture is totally different. So you can't impose that. So it has to adapt. I think it's a strange one. The culture will change in 2021, and the way that we do business and the way that we like behave with each other. But I still do think, going back to that social media thing, that we're very, very mindful of, you know, what we put in our bodies, you know, nutritionally. I just think we need to be like even more mindful going forward when people are isolated about what we put in our heads, you know, because I think our brains need a workout every now and again, and need to be, you know, maintained and healthy. And staring at like crap on Twitter or, you know, nonsense responses to things that you put out is something that really does affect.
Do you think that's one of the possibly advantages of being a creative, let's say, that you can be in your job naturally inquisitive and create things and unpredictable, and you know, you can keep yourself sort of mentally stimulated, let's say. I know really as great creatives you're supposed to draw culture as well from outside, from films and whatever's happening in the world, but you know, if you're an accountant pushing numbers around and doing it at home, I don't know if it's interesting or boring. I could only hazard a guess. But I think if you're one day you're Adrian going off to do a shoot 3 days before you were finishing off the script, the next week you're doing some brand, you know, cultural identities or something like that, the diversity and the being able to use your mental faculty is stimulating, and I think perhaps energizing, and perhaps some other industries or other types of work don't afford that luxury.
I think as a creative, we're very lucky in a way when we talk about creatives, not just creatives in advertising, but creatives in art, you know, creatives where you're having to create. I'll tell you why, because one of the great constituents of being creative is having an interest in life, basically. It's having and human nature and psychology and everything else. And, you know, so you've got an active mind. You're always thinking. And I think for Shahid mentioned about mental health, which is really important issue right now through COVID, is that I think creators are lucky that they have the facility, if you like, or the ability to be able to completely keep themselves active, thinking about certain things. You know, it's like it's almost a distraction going through really bad times. The other thing that's interesting, when we were talking about culture, I think a lot of culture is about teamwork. And Selwyn and Adrian, we worked together at Payne & Walters back in the day, you know, back in the 90s. It's going back a long time now, but they were like golden years of comms. Things have changed a lot since then because technology's advanced and everything has changed in a way. But there was a shared spirit. And I think culture is about a shared spirit. And being part of a shared spirit is very hard when you're isolated at the end of a camera, you know, or a Zoom meeting or something. You're not experiencing, you know, we're human beings. We are supposed to be work together, you know, like we are now, everybody, we're discussing things from our own personal point of view and being respectful to one another's personal point of view. And it's that respect that's missing, I think, on social media. You're talking about Twitter. There's absolutely no respect whatsoever. You know, Donald Trump doesn't respect anyone else and doesn't give a shit about anyone else. It's just about what he wants. His supporters love him. they love him because he is doing, they feel he is doing something. You know, the stakes have been put down. They've had enough. They want to follow him. They know that he's going to act on their behalf. And that's why they feel strong. This is human psychology. This is human nature. It's very interesting what's going on. If a little bit scary, I've got to say.
It is quite scary. It plays to the lowest common denominator, Frank. You know, we can all appeal to the, you know, we can all, everyone's got a bad side, and it's quite good fun to sort of sit in that space every now and again. And appealing to somebody's sort of bad side is quite easy. I think it's, you know, if you look at healthcare advertising, it's bloody difficult to do a positive ad. It's much easier, or a positive piece of communication, it's much easier to talk about a disease and how shit it is and do an incredible, you know, visual metaphor of that disease. And that's it, to be fair, that's the type of stuff that wins awards. But
Well, I think it's true. I'm sure that Shahid can, as, you know, running the creative floor, he's been doing it successfully for a few years now, and I think it's great. I've been there a few times. I loved it when he had that boxing ring thing going on. I always loved that. But it's true, though, isn't it, Shahid? I mean, the way I see it, and it goes right back in the last 35 years, if you want to win an award, work on a charity. Do blind dogs. Do blind dogs. Do an idea. You know, do a dog with a man's eyes. Yeah, that win an award. Yeah, blind dogs. So, well, I'm sorry, that sounds, you know, but that's the way it used to be. The other thing is, of course, you don't get paid for doing, you wouldn't, would you? You don't do a charity and then want loads of money to buy your yacht. Yeah, buy a yacht. Oh, how do you buy that yacht? Well, I did a charity ad, you know, pay me loads of money. Yeah, love it. No, but seriously, I've always felt that anything to do with charity gets you to that award, and even though you know they're not paying for it, you're doing it bakshi, you're doing it free, you know, it does add to kudos. That's my
cynical
view, Charlie. Yeah.
No, you're completely right, and I think that's where some of the sort of debates, certainly we've done on podcasts in the past, with, like, you know, how to win at Cannes, you know, the health and wellness category, because it's all pro bono, most of it. And you can't compete. How can you compete with, you know, a charity ad versus GSK ovarian cancer drug? Like, you just can't. But just to say, on the creative floor side, we have a section for charity. We have a section for pharma. We have a section for consumer. So there are very distinct lanes. If you want to put in pro bono, it can go against other pro bono work. It's never going to go against branded work. So yeah, that's the creative floor. But yeah,
Shahid, is there a charity bit that covers the cost of entry to your awards?
there might be. I don't know about them, but yeah, I'll look into one if you want.
Very cynical Selwyn.
Grants for entry.
I'll give you a couple of quid if you want towards it.
Government grant, yeah. It's not called a government grant, it's called a mortgage.
Yeah, too many people to help in the world. That's the problem. Like, you know, I mean, I think actually it's interesting because, you know, 2020 also had a massive, massive impact on charities, on donations, and it's all. I think the people who are the most vulnerable in society, you know, people from, you know, perhaps really struggle to get by. You know, parents might not be able to afford, you know, three meals a day, and people being furloughed and people losing their jobs. And I mean, this is like a period in time that, you know, I've never experienced, and I've never seen live in my own country. So yeah, fair enough. Like, the entry fees are what they are, but I mean, you know, we've got to raise even more money this year, because last year was pretty much, you know, didn't happen for us. I mean, we always had our pool of charities that we always used to help, but the amount, I can tell you just from my own personal experience, the amount of extra charities I didn't even know existed, certainly in the field of helping kids into creative agencies that have got in touch with us to see if we can help them, it's just been unbelievable. And you're just sort of there, just, you feel so, and you can't help everyone, you know, you just can't, it's just sort of financially impossible. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's I guess that's why I can justify the prices, because in the end, they're not sort of going into my mouth, they're sort of going into other people's, you know. So anyway, That's my plug.
Well done, Steve. Well done.
Good plug too.
No, it's good. No, it's really good though. I do think people, you know, walk in my shoes for a day or whatever the expression is. I think in 2020 and going forward in 2021, this second lockdown, you know, you've got far more. Is the word philanthropic, Selwyn?
Yeah, well, people giving money away.
Well, people have become. I think that a lot of people have become more aware of charities this year, simply because this year and the middle of last year, simply because everybody's like, it's a tough time. People are losing their jobs. People are, you know, worried about their jobs, thinking about that. You see, you know, these poor people who are, you know, they're not being helped by the government. They're not being looked after properly. All of a sudden, you know, it's on the news now. You know, it never used to really bother before. There'd be a red nose day and sport aid day, and then you see some stuff. Now it's like, oh, actually, we're living this. So I think a lot more people have become a lot more into like looking at others and empathy. I think I'd like to think that empathy might be the theme of 2021. You know,
I think that's it's a really interesting thing. You know, you imagine, you talk about philanthropy. I think it's just, in a way and a positive way, perhaps being a bit more human. You know, if you walk down the street, there are different kinds of people. You walk down the street, you see a homeless person, and you can be sympathetic to their plight. But it's much harder to have empathy unless you've been in that situation yourself. But in a funny way, the situation we find ourselves in today, you talk about humanity and philanthropy. To a certain extent, it's driven by there but for the grace of God go I. How lucky am I still to be having a roof over my head, or, you know, still have a job when other people don't. And so whatever's provoking that shift, and so therefore you can be not sympathetic to the plight of others, but empathetic, because you can feel that that is so very nearly your own plight. And so whatever's provoking that change, it's a good thing. I think it's a positive thing. So perhaps as we're talking about maybe what's going to happen in the future, maybe people will in a way become more conscious of the need to be more socially minded.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, you know, we've existed in this place where, you know, we take things for granted, and actually we shouldn't. You know, it's you know, just, you know, oh yeah, I'm gonna have a job for them. I've got a mortgage. I've got this. I've got that. And all of a sudden, you kind of, you know, when we hit these rocky times, you suddenly realise that actually nothing's. You shouldn't take anything for granted anymore.
No, you're absolutely right, Adrian. I think we're going through a time of learning. Really, a lot of it is negative, but you're right. There's also the positivity about human nature. You know, it's easy for us to talk about how bad things are, and people do talk about how bad things are. But, you know, we're talking about the positive side of the human nature, and that is one of caring. And as you said before, empathy. You know, empathy is a great word. In fact, it's a word I was going to use. I was thinking of starting another ad agency, and I was going to call it Empathy. I thought it was
It's never going to fly.
Great name. Yeah, I mean, it's one of my thoughts, and it never quite got off the ground, that one. But I think the word empathy is really what tremendous creativity is all about. Creativity that when you want to convey an idea and share the spirit and avoid things like mental health issues, well, you know, learn to paint watercolors on frankwatercolors.com. Sorry, I was following Shahid then. I mean, unashamed plug for frankwatercolors.com. I've done it again. Sorry. That's really bad.
No, I was just going to say, I think one of the problems is that human nature changes over time, and the nature of businesses change over time. It's harder when things are accelerated. Something like COVID causes such a massive acceleration in the need to change that it potentially leaves people behind. I think that's, you know, businesses evolve over time. Of course they do. And human existence changes and adapts. And we all, you know, Frank talks about, we were all, I mean, I've only ever worked in an environment where there have been computerized, computers and that level of technology. But it builds and it adjusts and it develops and we follow it along. But when things change so fundamentally and virtually overnight and without any way in which you can influence or control it, then it's tough for people because some people can be left behind because the pace is too quick. And that's really what's different here. Everything changes, but when it changes too fast, I think that has problems for certain people. You know, we see that. You see organizations that have got online platforms adapt and others that don't fail. And that is a result of these rapid changes, whereas in a more slow, gentle times, we all move. And that means that we carry with us the less, you know, if we're moving more slowly, we carry with us, this is a bit more of a philosophical point of view, as you move more slowly, you can carry with you the less able, the less capable. You remember it was last year or a couple of years ago when we started talking about, people started talking about the move to online cash and online payments and the question over elderly people not having smartphones and not having the internet, not being internet savvy. The pace leaves people behind sometimes.
Because I thought what you said, Aid, was quite interesting around the crazies. I was having a chat the other day with a friend who sort of works in the industry, and we were just talking about sort of people when we were growing up, like, you know, you looked up to, and they're sort of the same people look up to now. And even if you look, you sort of go into the healthcare industry, like, you guys are very prominent. You know, people could just say Frank, right, within a conversation, and I might not even be in Frank's agency, but people know who you're referring to, or Aid or whatever. Like, you know, you guys were certainly sort of characters and slight crazies, which is great because all agencies have to have a personality, and I think the creative departments are generally stronger for somebody who has a perspective and somebody who has a reputation. Do you think there are still crazies? Do you think after we come out of this, you know, it'll be a rise of more crazies, or do you think they'll just be completely obliterated and it will just be agencies run by sort of, you know, corporate robot types?
That's a good point, Shahid, and it depends. I think it depends what the agency is focused on. I don't know if you guys read George Tenenbaum on LinkedIn. He always makes me laugh. George to be fair, you know, when you go through tough times, you think, "Oh God, all right." George Tenenbaum, he always, you know, cheers me up. So well done, George. Thank you very much for that. But I would say it depends what your agency's focus is. So if your agency's focus is money, or, you know, paying shareholders and doing all that stuff, then that culture is going to be much, much different to an agency's focusing on creative work, like an independent agency. And sometimes I this has been proven like year on year, there's a lot of agencies that are very small and very, very creative. And they're very creative for a reason. And the reason is to get bought out by a network. And then they stop being creative. But that's a bit of a generalization, obviously. But if your focus is creative work, then that culture is going to be much, much different to if your focus is making money. If your focus is just making good work, then that's a different culture again. I always think, to be fair, I think if you do good work, the awards and the money follow. But you can switch them around a little bit. If you're a digital agency, then your culture is going to be different again. So I think that, I do think those smaller shops will have that a more individual sense, if you like, than perhaps the networks. And I think that sort of flattening out of culture is one of those things that seems to be prevalent. I could be completely wrong, but it's just in my head.
I don't think you're wrong at all. I think you're absolutely right. I think with the if we talk about the crazies, we're talking about people who stand out. I remember the crazies came originally from a commercial, wasn't it, for Apple?
Yeah.
Wasn't it Apple?
Yeah,
from Chiat Day back in the day, whenever that was. And they did the crazy, wonderful commercial. And I remember also we had a forecast whenever it was, middle of last year, where we talked about where have all the heroes gone. Do you remember that?
Mm.
And it's quite true. The I think crazies can manipulate yourself as being a crazy on social. A lot of people on social media are doing it. It's a fight for voice, isn't it? It's a fight to clamber and get up there and get so many subscribers. I mean, I'm doing it as well with Frank Watercolors on YouTube. I'm trying to build my group of subscribers, and I'm putting some films up there, and I want more and more people to see it. But then you start looking at YouTube. I use YouTube a lot. If I've got any issue at all, like I don't know how this thing works, I ask YouTube, how does this thing work? And within milliseconds, there's a guy showing me visually how this thing works. I mean, it's unbelievable. But some of those people teaching other people how things work become the best people at telling people how things work. And there's like a hierarchy going on, isn't there? And right at the very top of that hierarchy, there are the crazies, I suppose, the new heroes of our day. I just think it's very different. You know, when you, Aidan Selwyn, and I worked together in an agency, it was so different then. We had a shared spirit. We both agreed and we worked together. So I don't know whether that working together bit is maybe we're getting more individual, and COVID is making us be even more individual because we're working by ourselves.
You know, they used to say, we've always said not only just agencies, any organisation, but particularly advertising agencies and creative agencies, collections of people, they talk about them being not an agency, but it's the people that make it. But the truth is, it's not the people. These are individuals. It is the sum of the individuals.
The sum of the individuals.
It is not simply being a collection of individuals. It is the sum of the individuals. And when you've got 3 people in Reading and 15 people in Leeds and 20, then the ability to form a synergy begins to disappear because everybody's behind a screen. And so,
I reckon, I mean, just to interrupt, I do think it becomes harder. I still think you can do it.
You can do it, but it is harder. When you're we're an organisation of, you know, well, let's just put it this way. We can get enough, we can get all of us on the screen in one go in a Zoom call, just about. Little thumbnails of everyone. So we can come together as a collection, but, you know, we've been in agencies, Adrian, Shahid, Frank, I was at Ogilvy. We've all been in organisations of hundreds of people. And when you want to put that many people together, it's very hard. You have to create little silos. You've got organisations operating within organisations, and it takes a little bit more effort. And going back to what I'm talking about before, about the evolution of I think the need to change has happened faster than the sort of natural progression that would have happened. I think that we can do it. I just think we're in a massive period of adjustment.
Perhaps a new thing going forward, Sal, is like Zoom leaders. You know, it's like those, they never meet your heroes in, in real life. Maybe that's the new skill set going through for 2021. It's how to command an audience via the internet.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, the crazies are manipulated on social. You know, that's where they are now. That's where these people dictate from. And I'm finding it myself, even in the little niche area I am with watercolor painting, I'm finding that there's a hierarchy going on just within that little niche. Never mind the niche of health communications. I mean, it's happening everywhere, isn't it?
You talk about the crazies, and I remember Shahid, we've been chatting on a previous podcast, and we had I have forgotten her name, the lady who is a headhunter at
Sophia. Yeah, Sophia Shade. Yeah.
And she was talking about that online, effectively online screening process. So the initial sort of screening is kind of fairly digital.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we if you're not careful, you do inadvertently, you're looking for certain sets of characteristics. You know, the old adage, you don't know it till you see it kind of thing, which is a terrible thing when a client says it about advertising.
Yeah.
But you might miss the crazies because of the formulation of your algorithm in order to detect to find your next crop of staff. So I don't know where this, like, other than just that the technology is not working in our favour, if you think that the crazies need to be the Zoom heroes of tomorrow.
How many of us have looked at a job on LinkedIn, thought, actually, do you know what? I quite fancy that. That'd be quite good. And then you sort of do an online, which take ages, these online, you submit your CV online, but you also have to answer a bunch of questions online. And then it seems to go off in an algorithm, which gets spat out at the other end and said, no, you didn't meet this criteria and that criteria. And then you kind of look at it and go, oh, right, I didn't put that buzzword in. The way these algorithms work is that you don't put the word in, you know, but they're looking for, then that's it, you're
born. Yeah. Your problem was you put your name in.
Yeah, it's not really the case. Yeah, maybe I have to change my name. But no, it is one of those things. It's really frustrating. You kind of think, I didn't even get past the first post there because I didn't put that word in that I was supposed to put in, and the algorithm spat me out.
That's a massive issue right now, certainly for creative roles. Yeah. Because it's about the work, right? Back in the day, it was like, show us your work and have a chat. And, you know, once you've seen someone's work and if you like it, it's just about a personal connection then, isn't it? It's not about how many years experience or whatever. That's, I think, when you mentioned the crazies, it's just sort of like, I thought, maybe we should just dig into that a little bit more, because fair enough, like the rate of technology is just, you know, going at 1,000 miles an hour, and you know that it's rescued many jobs, frankly, you know, being in COVID, the ability to be able to continue generating work and income, and that's great. So technology has been wonderful. I'm speaking from personal experience now, because I haven't gone public with it yet, but I'm sort of currently working client side, and it's really interesting because I've sort of gone behind the curtain and I've sort of seen how it, you know, how it all operates on an e-commerce basis and all that sort of stuff. Well, I can see all the worries and all the challenges that clients have and clients face on a day-to-day basis. And I've just sort of gone, you know,
I've downloaded all the files,
I've got everything. Yeah. But because my mindset before going in there was, well, you know, agencies are dead, but, you know, everything's going to go in-house, you know, agencies' incomes are going to just decline year on year. It's an industry that's sort of on its deathbed. That was my first impression before I joined. Now that I'm in there, my perception has completely changed. I'm like, agencies have never been more important, because I can really see where agencies genuinely add, you know, not just value, but they're at the heart of these clients' brands. You know, they're at the heart of the soul. They're the heart of the creative. They're the heart of every reason why somebody would want to buy, you know, Durex or baby milk or whatever it is. So I can now, I've flipped the other side. I'm like, God, you know, the industry actually is gonna bounce back. And, you know, healthcare obviously is doing really, really well. But after this, agencies have got to get back to what agencies are really good at doing, which is ultimately creating amazing stuff. And I just sort of, when you mentioned the word crazies, I just thought that's so interesting, because I grew up wanting to be a crazy. I grew up with people that I had, you know, I could name 10 people on my hands of like, okay, Dave Trott, legend, you know, John Hegarty, legend, you know, whatever. And you sort of look today and you just wonder, well, who are people referencing now? Because I'm still referencing the same people. and you know, there were certain periods in my career where I've sort of sat there going, do you know what? If I interviewed for my own role today, I don't think I'd get it. Just because
I'd never get a job today.
No, me neither.
I'd never get a job today. One of the interesting things is, you know, when you're trying to recruit, how do people recruit the crazies? And Adrian just mentioned something about not using the right buzzword or not saying the right thing on the Zoom interview. And really, I think, you know, the crazies are basically people. And how do you recruit the right people? And I'll tell you how you do it. Not by waiting to hear whether they've got a buzzword or not, but just seeing what they're like as human beings. You said something, Shahid, it is about the best people doing the most creative. Yeah, it is that, but it's also the right people. You know, when I used to recruit at back in the day at Paling Waters, I hired both Selwyn and Adrian, and one of those two at the interview got pissed and threw up on my shoes. And he still got the job.
Which one?
And he still got the job.
Who was it?
I'm not telling you.
Oh.
And And he's still got the job. And the reason for that is that you can feel something. He didn't say the right buzzwords. What he did was he came across as a person that had, you know, incredible potential. And I saw that. I absolutely saw that. And the being sick on my shoes is a truth and a reality. And I was there with a girlfriend at the time. She was quite shocked by that. And then he thought that he hadn't got the job. And he did get the job because, you know what? You know, the future of that guy's ability in the industry was far more important than the quality of my shoes at that point. And this is a true story, by the way. And when I hear, you know, Adrian telling me about, you know, he didn't say the right buzzword, so he got knocked off the list. That sickens me, because that's people, recruiters or whatever, not really understanding what human nature is all about. Because you only get crazies if you're the right type of person. You've got to want to have that ambition of doing, you know, and I've got role models, like you mentioned, Hegarty and Dave Trott and, you know, people like that, David Abbott back in the day, you know, all these people. I still love them. And we had that conversation, didn't we, on Forecast about where have all the heroes gone? And it is a little bit like that. But I'm sure they'll come back. They will just take on a different form.
Okay, cool. Well, let's drop in some job opportunities then. So Carl Owen at Word Monster is hiring for the Fearsome Five. That's for 5 senior experienced medical writers and medical copywriters. They work on all kinds of creative, promotional, and technical and educational materials. They've built a truly forward-thinking culture in how they operate, treat their staff, and work with their clients. So check out the roles at wordmonster.agency or email Carl directly to carl@wordmonster.agency. And that's Carl with a C. And I must say, I know Carl very well, and he is an absolutely genuine gem. A really, really brilliant guy. And I think anyone working for Word Monster is truly, truly lucky. So do check them out. Also, remind everyone that if you do want to promote any roles on this podcast, do get in touch. Or if you need a bit more of a bespoke service, do check out our new talent platform, The Creative Floor Superstars.
You do find it really sad that people are still going on about Burnback, you know? It's just kind of, wow, why am I? I mean, obviously, you know, the guy's an absolute legend, and, you know, the stuff that he did has, you know, changed the world and changed the face of advertising. But it does seem to me to be quite sad that, you know, we're talking about somebody from the 60s still, you know.
Well, I think there's plenty of mileage in Bill Burnback, might I just say. But I've been looking at a bit of Burnback recently. Actually, just on a more serious note, Burnback has a story. It's not quite as gross as Sick on Shoes, but he makes exactly the same point. Frank has made it 50 years later. But it was an interview, and Burnback was talking about where he gets creative people from, and he said he met somebody who come from some shitty little agency, and they had virtually no sort of experience that he needed or anything like that. He said it was just from a nothing agency. But Burnback says he saw one good idea and he thought this guy might be up for it, might be up to the task. And it turned out to be Bob Levinson, who turned out to be one of the greats of American advertising back in the day. But yeah, it wasn't taking somebody who already had ticked all the boxes and had all that, as you say, the buzzwords and the book even. It's just something, a spark. Because, you know, and again, these, you know, if you hire the same people all the time, the same types of people, if your agent's filling in his algorithm online and gets spat out the other end and rejected, that algorithm's choosing a certain profile of people. If you're going to get the same people year after year, you just get the same ideas year after year. The stuff never changes. And it's new ideas that brands want to buy, not the same idea.
You need flint and iron to make a spark smashing together.
Flint and iron.
I actually thought it was you, Selwyn, but it was clearly Aid. Right.
I can tell you another part of that story. I was there.
Oh, were you?
I was there. But yeah, I was there enjoying the spectacle.
It's a long story, and to be honest, it wasn't one of my finest. I'll tell you how it happened. My boss at the time got wind that I was going to do an interview at 5:30.
Yes.
So he came out at lunchtime and got me absolutely arsehole. So I fucked the interview up.
He phoned me up in a panic, if I remember rightly.
Well, he said, right, you're coming out with me, and we're going to, it was the fifth floor in Harvey Nichols, and we're going to drink cocktails all afternoon. I was like, well, I don't want to. So, it was back in those days, it was a bit of a three-line whip. So I ended up going there and sort of trying to sort of sip them. And then, I ended up back at the office at 5:30 and then just all over the shop, phoning Selwyn, going, oh, Christ, can we cancel it? No, we can't cancel it. All right, okay, I'll come over. So I did my best through the interview. I struggled through the interview, but drank loads of coffee and chewed loads of chewing gum and sort of kept it together. And then Frank said, oh, should we go down the pub?
Let me just interject, you didn't quite get it together. There was a point where Frank asked you about two or three different ads that you'd done, and you just went, I don't fucking know, I just do the pictures.
Yeah, I remember that. And I like that attitude. I thought that was good, because it was a bit like me at the time.
Yeah, I did say that. And then, obviously, I tried to sort of front it out and went down the pub. And I think I got two drinks in, and that was me. I was full to the brim. And, the rest is history. But I tell you what I did do the very next day. So I woke up in a blind panic, got a bit of the old paranoia, and I did design the best CV I think I've ever done. It had, like, blind embossing on it and all sorts. I wrote it in the second person, third person.
It was the story of Abe Parr.
It was a story, yeah.
So
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
I remember this from, and this must be what, 20 odd years ago plus. And I still remember that CV. What was your dad called? It was somebody in Pearl.
Sydney and Pearl.
Yeah. That's how it started off.
Yes, yeah. I still have that CV of yours that you gave me over.
Have you really, Frank?
25 years, a quarter of a century, maybe even longer, wasn't it? I can't even remember now, but yes, I still have that. It's amazing.
Did Adrian tell you, he told me the other day, that he's very proud that his son was born on the same day as Hermann Göring?
It was one of those. It was one of those like little facts. The other day, it's funny actually. It's quite weird. I was on this photo shoot the other day. It was like, I always do this thing. So I look up other people's birthdays when it says birthdays, and I always say, oh, you share your day with such and such. And obviously, I still put them on Facebook. And I looked up Charlie's birthday, and I said, oh my God, he shares his birthday with Hermann Göring. Along with Howard Stern and Jeff Bezos.
Wow.
So in different company, I suppose. But I always do that on birthdays. Yeah, just look up who else has a birthday.
Hermann Göring actually cheated the hangman, didn't he? He was in the Nuremberg war trials and
he killed him.
Yeah, he took a tablet and killed him. So he cheated the hangman, basically. But apparently he was supposed to, not in the defense of Hermann Göring, don't get me wrong here, not trying to defend Hermann Göring at all, but he was...
I think it was a bit late for that. The trials were a long time ago.
he was an ace, wasn't he, in the First World War. He flew planes, and then he completely lost it then and got into uniforms and wearing makeup and all sorts of weird stuff. Hermann Göring, a real
Göring.
We go there. Yeah,
was it Göring who, if I've got the story right, Hitler announced that he was going to commit suicide rather than be captured alive. And Göring wrote, if I'm remembering rightly, Göring wrote back to him saying, well, in which case, can I take over as Chancellor? To which Hitler said no, and then removed him from all official duties.
Do you know, I've known a few, sort of assistant creative directors that have tried to do that with me as well. Is that right? Yeah. Deputy creative director, yeah. How are you going? Can I have your job?
Yes.
I wonder, Frank, as I knocked Byrne back and sort of said earlier, oh God, we're still referring to him.
Yeah.
But actually, when we're talking about everything changing, to be honest, if we are still, his words are still as relevant then as they are now. And, you know, what you've just said is still as relevant, you know, then as they are now.
Of course.
When we talk about change, everything's changed, but actually, the fundamentals are still the same.
Yes, they are. Yeah, yes, they are. And people, you were right, Adrian. You said something which was quite interesting earlier about YouTube, and that is that people can learn off YouTube and can even become an art director or a creative director in advertising. You know, just spouting what you hear on YouTube, because everything comes around, everything is there. It all exists. It's not new. It's always been around. It's just that it's dressed in different ways. I remember back in the 90s, there was this buzzword called digital, you know, and it's like digital communication. And everybody's trying to work out what that meant. Does that mean doing a detail aid on an iPad? You know, and it was so naive in those days, wasn't it, Adrian, that people just did a paper detail aid and just copied it and basically put it on an iPad and said, there you go, it's digital. And nobody quite understood where digital would go. They didn't understand the full integration.
Shahid, I don't know whether you agree with this, but it was for a while a little bit of a stick to beat an agency up with, like, oh, they're not digital enough, or, oh, you know, what's your, you know, digital implementation plans going forward, you know, all that sort of stuff. Did you find that sometimes you'd get swallowed up in this world of, you know, I look at a lot in this digital world where you got these buzzwords and very important meetings with tons and tons of stuff, which, and you sort of sit there and shake your head and go, I don't really understand what you're saying. And then you actually find out what it is they do and you go, oh, it's that. But it's wrapped up in this like amazing, like, you know, presentation, which is uber slick and full of stuff. And he's like, oh, right. Oh, it's an email.
Yeah, that sales aid story is exactly right. You do a sales aid landscape, a portrait, and it's print. You want to go digital, rotate it through 90 degrees so it's landscape, and it fits on an iPad, suddenly it's digital.
Yeah. I'd like to think we've advanced a little bit more than that these days.
No, but I'd just be – that. Yeah, there was a lot of smoke and mirrors about –
I did think there was, and it, you know, it was sort of like the be all and end all, but actually, it's just another platform, isn't it? You know, we've got radio, we've got TV, we've got posters, we got digital, and now we've got like subsections of digital, and it's funny, isn't it? I mean, I think the you know, if you look at tone of voice across digital, so I should imagine all three of us are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and
Pornhub. No.
Good plug, Selwyn.
And do you find that your personality changes completely if you're writing something on LinkedIn and you're writing something on Facebook and you're writing something on Twitter? You wouldn't say the same stuff.
No, you wouldn't. No, because these are very specific mediums.
Yeah, and how you adjust your conversation, and I don't know, it would be quite an interesting exercise, wouldn't it? Just go, right, okay, I'm going to write something on Twitter, but actually the thing I was going to write on Twitter, I'm going to stick on LinkedIn, and the thing I was going to write on LinkedIn, I'm going to stick on Twitter, just see what happens. Mess it up, you know? I wonder if that would be, that'd be quite an interesting exercise.
Well, they say that all news is good news, don't they? I mean, you know, we used to have that conversation back in the day at Paley & Waters about, you know, is it important to say the right thing, or is it important to say something that gets a reaction? You know, because, you know, you want to be noticed, don't you? But do you want to be noticed for the right or the wrong reasons, I suppose? That's the thing. Or do you just want to create a debate?
I remember saying, it's funny, actually. It's a stock example. It's a stock excuse on LinkedIn. If you think that... And sometimes some people put a 48-sheet poster up and people say, oh, it's awful. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, no. And then some people go, well, Well, actually, it does exactly the job that we wanted it to do because it's being talked about.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, bollocks. Like, how do you have an argument with somebody that says that? You know? Yeah. Because the more you're right, you're talking about it. You're going to go, oh, God, you've won. You know, oh, you beat me at LinkedIn or you beat me at Twitter.
Yeah, it's a real dough moment, isn't it, when that happens? It's like you reply and you think, you idiot. And then you sort of realize that you're throwing fuel on the fire, you know.
Or you're spending more time crafting a witty reply than actually doing the job in the first place.
One thing I never understand with LinkedIn, there are a couple of people that I know that keep posting all the time about things they find, and I keep thinking, haven't you got a job to do? You know, what do you do during the day? Do you just keep finding sort of wanting to, and what good does that do you? You know, the purveyor of knowledge, you know, it doesn't make you a better person, you know. Really, really, really weird stuff. I'll tell you what, talking of social, I mean, although I'm an older bloke, I have to, because of having worked in advertising and now, you know, sort of running frankwatercolors.com, running, you know, my watercolor painting scenario, which is very creative, just gets the most out of people. And I really enjoy doing that. It's just that, you know, where I'm not savvy with absolutely everything. I love YouTube because I can do moving images on there. I do films. I'm sort of with Facebook, although a lot of people have stopped going on Facebook because it started getting very political for some reason.
I think it's going to be really interesting in the next 2 or 3 years, actually, in terms of how we engage with these social platforms, because ultimately they're free, right? Like, you know, you can set up a YouTube channel that's completely free, Instagram, Facebook, etc. But in the end, they're getting something out of us. They're getting data, and that data is ultimately valuable because they're essentially selling it to brands and making absolutely billions of dollars out of it. Now, I don't necessarily have an issue with that, because if I'm interested in watercolors and somebody's going to be offering me deals on watercolors, great, fine. I'm actually very happy with that. I don't have an issue with that whatsoever. I think where it's starting to get quite dark is when it's starting to have political influence and you're starting to get people in echo chambers. So if I have a particular point of view on a political view, I'm just going to be revved up by it because I'm just going to get lots of other people reflecting the same opinion as me. I'm not necessarily getting a balanced view. And I think that's where it's starting to get really tricky, and people are going to start deciding where they want to be. I mean, even just the fact that going back to Donald Trump now, but even the fact that he's been kicked off Twitter is interesting, because you're kind of thinking, well, he ain't going to disappear. So where is he going to go? All of a sudden, I think you're going to start getting splinter groups of different social media platforms.
Well, there's already something started moving away from WhatsApp, hasn't there?
Signal.
Signal, that's right. And
Parler as well, isn't there? That's which seemed to be, I sort of looked at Parler. It's just, it's kind of Twitter for Nazis. I've probably got that.
Yeah, they've just shut it down. They've just shut that down now.
Yeah. If you get kicked off Twitter, you can go on to Parler, and there's lots of people talking about it. So I had a look, and I thought, oh, God, it's not very nice.
It sounds like it's just for angry people, isn't it?
It is. I think the echo chamber phrase is exactly right.
What you were saying is so true. If the algorithm is basically going, okay, well, you think this, this, and this, so therefore we're going to find 50 people who all think the same, then actually nothing moves forward. You know what I mean? It's sort of that algorithm is kind of wrong. And then what we're looking at is, okay, so what do we want people to think? And then we'll find another 50 people that, you know, think something completely different. Maybe it's all about changing. Maybe the social change is basically changing behavior so everybody thinks the same. Maybe. Don't know. We're going through a period now, with a rough period, when actually we'll come out the other side and we'll be in a brave new world where you know, there are rules and regulations, things you don't do and things you do do, and then you know get on a plane and go and see the wild people in another country that don't have any of those rules, and we laugh at them, you know.
It's very clever social, how they understand your interests, where you're looking. What worries me is if governments start finding out your political persuasion, then that starts to worry me a little bit, because surely there's got to be, you know, as human beings, we're allowed to have some individualism. We, you know, I mean, this is why Orwell was so right, wasn't he, in 1984? He was, you know, the individual, you know, individualism is sort of hard to find now. Everybody knows everything about everyone. And that's slightly scary. I don't.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I'm just sort of reflecting on when I sort of signed up to social platforms, and in the beginning, I think for most people, they were just there as nice things because it was a way to connect with old school friends or workmates, and it was almost like a calendar, just a reminder of birthdays and whatever. It started off nice, and you know, my wife's from Hong Kong, so I've got a. You know, my sort of news channels are sort of from all over the place, really. And even if you look at what's going on in China right now in certain regions, it's a bit like a sort of Black Mirror world where basically it's almost like everyone's got a social profile, and that is basically linked to how successful your life is going to be. So it all works on a credit system. So for example, if you share anything on social media that basically criticizes the government in any sort of way, you get minus points. If you post anything that's positive, you get plus points. And it's almost like a game of life linked with your social media profile, and it's completely connected. So it's not just on WeChat or LinkedIn or Weibo. It's the whole thing. So they have access to every single individual's social profile, what they email, and all those sorts of things. And basically, those points mean prizes. So if you score a certain amount of your sort of social points, you basically get cheaper insurance. Your kids are allowed to go to the better schools and all those sorts of things. But all of a sudden, if you're not behaving yourself, then you don't get enough points. And then all of a sudden, your insurance is more expensive and your kids can't go to the school that they want to go to.
Wow.
And they're trialing that at the moment. And it's also linked to this sort of facial recognition technology as well. So it's not just when you're on your phone, you're on your computer, it's actually when you're out and about as well. So if you're out and about and they recognize that you've just mugged someone and you get caught, you know, minus points. So there's this sort of like social conditioning. And this is all fact, by the way. You can look into this online. I mean, I get this sort of fed through her every day because she's sort of really sort of worried about the way that things are going in Hong Kong and all that sort of stuff. Because at the moment, our news channel is all around COVID. There used to be Brexit and a bit of Trump, but there's so much sort of dark stuff going on right now. To your point, Frank, like government's access to all this information, because it all started off, I think, in the beginning as very innocent and nice. And now all of a sudden, you know, some people have looked at what they can do with this data. And this sort of social conditioning is almost like something out of a Black Mirror episode, really. It's so kind of weird. And it's frightening, actually. It's really frightening.
It is incredibly Orwellian, isn't it? It's you know, it's what we all feared, and it's actually happening. And I suppose technology facilitates this, doesn't it? You know, it allows these things to happen because we're all on it, and COVID has made us more dependent on social and, you know, than probably ever before. And I think a lot of people that I know that I'm now seeing on my courses, online courses, they haven't necessarily been on there before. Now they're learning to go onto Zoom and communicate that way. So they're being bought into it. Doesn't matter what your age is and who you are and where you live and what you do, you're being pulled into social platforms and through technology. And that technology will come back to you. It will come back to you and it will tell you what to do and how to behave.
It's the contributions. It's the technology itself is fine in principle. I mean, one would argue.
Yeah, but it's what you do with it, though. Sorry,
exactly.
Isn't it?
And people are more and more naively comfortable with putting information out there which compromises them in some way or is best, you know that where it used to be, you'd think about writing an email and the idea is you should write the email. And I think there's even some software that will do this. You write the email and it stores it for an hour before you send it, just in case you've sent something you shouldn't have done. And I think people just need to, if there's at all a worry about it, you need to be maybe the cat's out of the bag now. Maybe there's nothing that can be done. But you need to really just moderate your own, you know, exposure, the way you expose your thoughts to other people, because somebody will take offence.
I think it's an interesting sort of challenge for brands, though, right? In the world of this, you know, everyone talks about data and big data, and it's like, what do you do with it? The way I kind of try to understand it in my little brain was, well, data is like electricity. I mean, if you know where somebody's going to go, and if you know when they're looking for something, or if you know when they're, you know, they want to research a health condition because they've just been diagnosed it or whatever, that data, you can see it as electricity. Now, you can, with electricity, you can do loads of stuff with that, right? You can make an electric chair and really damage someone, or you can build a fun fair and you can make it really great. Mm. And I think it's just what people and agencies' roles in what they do with all this information, because it's out there and it's only going to expand and grow. And I think that's where maybe the real dilemma, the social dilemma, is right now. What do you do with it? Because you can see it in the darkest form, you know, with sort of communism. Yeah. Countries of what they're doing with it, and then you got the other side where brands just don't know what to do with it, you know. And I think maybe that's where I believe that's where agencies will play a really pivotal role in making sure that they don't do any harm to people and actually, you know, build on people's experiences and get back to brand building and making people feel good about themselves again.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's great. Yeah, well said. Well said. It is about making people feel good about themselves. I think that's what we always did. You know, we spoke to doctors, like healthcare professionals, and we made them feel like, yes, they had made the right decision. Yes, they felt comfortable. Yes, they felt attached to the brand, even though they never, you know, they engage with the brand as a prescriber in a completely different way than a consumer would. But it's still that attachment that's important, and it's making people, professionals, feel good about what they're doing, you know, and they're doing the right thing. And that still applies, and that will never change. It doesn't matter what happens with comms and communication in health and well-being. That's never going to change. That will always be there. It's just that the channels have changed, haven't they, really?
Yeah, the channels have changed, but that what we do with it, I think Shade makes a really good point about what we do with the data and that responsibility. And I still wrestle with the fact that, you know, does the data, when Labour said they were going to like have their own broadband, that sent alarm bells to me. Do you remember that headline?
Oh, yeah.
In their manifesto, and I was kind of thinking, well, actually, that state sponsored broadband, bad thing. But then you look at. Then you look at the way that the internet's behaving, and Shahid came up with some good examples. Okay, so they've banned Donald Trump, but they haven't, you know, there's still people out there spouting all sorts of other hideousness. So who regulates the regulator? You know, how does that, and, you know, that governing body, there has to be a point, you know, where they kind of go, actually, do you know what? There needs to be some form of regulation on this. Because at the moment it seems to be self-regulating, and when you say, and people blindly post this stuff on the internet, walking in with their eyes wide shut, posting all this stuff, and I do kind of think sometimes, oh God, this is like, it's going to come around and bite you on the ass at some
point.
That's
because it's not the internet that's at fault, because internet is an infrastructure, like a road network or something. But Twitter and they're all privately owned commercial organizations. So the real thing is you're thinking, well, Twitter's free. I can say, you know, what I think about people. But yeah, these are private organizations. So private organizations are not necessarily controlled, but banks are controlled. So there is an argument that at some point, as they say about, you know, they become publishers, there is at some point. But we've gone a long way before we have gone a long way down the route of allowing everything to be said. And I'm just going to make the point, I think, yeah, if you're a company, I don't know, let's say you are, for the sake of argument, Facebook, or a similar big organization, a lot of data coming in. I'm sure that obviously people aren't going into offices now, but yeah. You have corporate social responsibility for your individuals, their health, their well-being. You make sure people don't fall down the stairs. You know, factories that have people lifting things, make sure they know how to lift things. Everybody is looking. But where's the social responsibility for the world we live in? If you're going to be an organization that has access to the world's thoughts, there needs to be a level of social responsibility, I think.
Fantastic.
I think that's a great place to maybe conclude. You guys have shared some amazing perspective on culture, politics, social media. I've learned that vomiting is probably the best way to get a job next time I'm in an interview. So, yeah.
Sort of joking aside, I remember it, and it was ridiculously funny, but you did end up thinking, what a brilliant bloke to have in the agency. I can't wait. Although, obviously, I knew Adrian before. Better than a load of librarians.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people listening to this will have got a lot out of it, and hopefully been very entertained as much as I have. So I just want to say thank you so much, Frank, Aid, and Selwyn, and we'll certainly get you all back on. We'll do another Creative Floor forecast mashup. Hopefully Jeremy will be able to join us, and yeah, thanks so much. I just wish you all a very happy new year, and stay safe.
That was great, Shahid.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cheers, Shahid.
If you do enjoy listening to these podcasts, please do subscribe and share whenever possible.